is for that. Yeah, I'm. You hope you can all hear me. Oh, you're recording. So, Lynn, did you actually record me this morning? I don't know if you did or not. Sharon said she wanted to listen, so she said she was. Oh, wow. It didn't save. Yeah. I wondered about, you know, like I said last time, it didn't save either. I think something happened. Yeah. Maybe, you know, one thing which you might want to do, Lynn, I know this happens, especially with the Satsang guests and stuff, is have two of you recording just for the important stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I wondered about that. Yeah. So, gosh, it's hard to like, yeah, no, that's too funny. No, it's not that I'm not important. It's all just, it just, you know, I think last time, I can't remember, there was a mix-up. And, you know what, I never get recorded anyway, so I don't really think about it. I think Dove used to record me back in the early days, but I have, you know, it doesn't. I always feel that these times we come into the room, if they're recorded, that's great. If they're not recorded, it's also perfect as well. So it's, to me, it's a spontaneous thing, and you can listen to it again. So you can record it again. So let me, unless my computer doesn't like you, but I think it was like a few months back. I want to say last time I was in the room as a teacher, it was probably about 3 or 4 months ago. So, you know what I might do is just for, you know, posterity's sake, I was here this morning teaching on silence, but it's always a bit of a upset when it happens, and that is, you know, that the people that are my clients decided this week that they were going to let me go. And my only client, my only source of, seemingly only source of income right now, said my last day is on December 16th, so I'm going to get half of my income in December. And it seems in the world of form that I just have money for taxes, but there's really not much extra money. So I'm probably going to have to maybe take away from some of that this month, do some credit card stuff, which I've been kind of doing somewhat of. And so it really kind of, you know, brings you to your knees when these things happen. And I knew that this was not going to be a long-time gig. I had been looking for work, you know, not kind of picky. I was kind of picky on what I was looking for, but it was kind of like really... It really got to me this week, and immediately called up my bank and talked to them, and they were really cool about it. And you know, there's some things, steps like getting rid of the cable was one of the steps. And here I'm a lawyer, right? I'm supposed to be able to make all this money, but I got rid of the cable part. A lot of it was because I'm not really listening to it very much. It's just background. And so, it's only $17 a month, but I thought, why keep it up? Why not just let it go? Because I don't really need it anymore. So a lot of humbling going on, as you're saying, Dances. So what I thought I would do, because since we didn't have this morning's recorded, and you're recording this, is that I would go ahead and read this section again from Adi Ashanti's book, Emptiness Dancing. And I don't even know, originally I was going to teach on going within and how important it is to do the practice. But I felt like that was a little bit too like my way or the highway. So, you know, I was looking, how do I approach this? How do I approach this in a way that will be helpful to me and others to increase their own desire for liberation? And so here is the reading for that we had this morning. And Hal Seeley did the reading, but today, now I'm doing it. So it goes like this. Half of the practice of spiritual inquiry is to take you to silence instantly. When you inquire, who am I? If you are honest, you'll notice that it takes you right back to silence instantly. The brain doesn't have the answer. So all of a sudden, there is silence. The question is meant to take you to that state of silence that is not manufactured, where thinking or searching for the right emotional experience fails. If you seek, who am I? Or ask, What is the truth? You will notice that these inquiries bring you instantly back to quiet. If you have a resistance to quiet, and most people have a profound resistance to quiet, then as soon as you go back to the quiet state, it is like putting drops of water in a hot frying pan. The mind jumps all over the place looking for something else, for some conceptual answer or image. The kind of quiet that is natural and spontaneous and not controlled is actually a heartful state, quiet, a heartful quiet. It's rich and vast. Controlled quiet is numb and narrow. When quiet is not controlled, you feel very open. You become receptive, and the mind is not imposing itself. There is a natural return to your true nature. Your true nature isn't quiet, it's quietness. It could also be called nobodyness or nothingness. When you come to the true quiet, you have transcended quietness. As long as you think quiet is in opposition to noise, that's not the true quiet. When you are in the true quiet, you realize that when you hear a jackhammer, that's the quietness. It's just taken some form. True quiet is absolutely inclusive. It goes beyond all dualistic ideas of what quiet is. When we come into stillness, we find that stillness is not separate from motion or movement. After you meditate, if you get up and go and start to go about your day thinking, why can't I keep this amazing stillness? It's because you've experienced the controlled stillness, not the natural and uncontrolled stillness. As you relax back into true stillness, when your body gets up to move, the stillness itself is moving. When you allow yourself to return to your true nature, you're not wanting any particular thing to happen in the stillness. Many times when people are quiet, they're waiting for something to happen. When itself keeps them on... Okay, let me read this again. Many times when people are quiet, they're waiting for something to happen, which itself keeps them on the periphery, treading water, instead of just letting go. When you aren't waiting for anything to happen, there is a natural sinking and deepening into the source of your own being. It's very quiet, and then, and only then, you start to sense presence. There is a very palpable presence in this quiet. That is why I said this is not a dead quiet. You can sense an aliveness. It's a presence that is inside your body and outside of your body. It permeates everywhere. When you are looking for it, you are looking for a gross presence, a heavy presence to hit you over the head. This isn't going to happen. The true quiet is a brightness. You feel bright. There is an awakeness, a deep sense of being alive. When you become quiet, you let yourself relax into the moment, into your true nature. When this happens, you realize you cannot avoid any part of your experience. If you are looking for quietness to help avoid some feeling, then you are not going to experience the real quietness. The nakedness of quiet or presence disarms you so that you can't avoid any experience, any event, anything. You might avoid things by experiencing a numb kind of quiet, but within the quietness of your true nature, you cannot avoid any part of experience. It is all right here, waiting. There are many stories or spiritual myths that are created and continue to be perpetrated that portray this coming back to our true nature as a battleground. As if there is something about you that doesn't want to return to itself. Whether it is called the ego, or the me, or the mind that doesn't really want to be quiet. Spiritual people can buy into this myth that there is something about them that doesn't want to wake up, and that there has to be some struggle. When you are really quiet, you can see that this is total nonsense. You can see that the thought arose in the mind out of emptiness. And only if you accept that it is true could it start a battle. But you see, clearly, it isn't true. It isn't really true. It's just a spontaneous arising of thought. It won't be true unless you believe it and bring it into the story of the heroic spiritual seeker's struggle. As soon as you involve yourself in the speaker's struggle, the seeker's struggle, you've already lost the war. You'll see from the silence that every way the mind moves is just a movement of thought that has no reality to it and becomes real only if you believe it. Thoughts are just moving through consciousness. They have no power. Nothing has reality until you reach it, grab it, and somehow impregnate it with the power of belief. The only way to enter silence is on its own terms. You can't go there with something, only with nothing. You can't be somebody, only nobody. Then entrance is easy. But this nothing is actually the highest price we ever pay. It's our most sacred commodity. We will give our ideas, our beliefs, our heart, our body, our mind, and our soul. The last thing that we'll give is nothing. We hold on to our nothingness because that is our most sacred commodity. And somewhere inside we know this. Only the nothing enters the silence. That's the only thing that gets in. The rest of what we are just bangs at the non-existent door. As soon as you want something from the silence, you are moved outside of the silence again. Silence reveals itself only to itself. Only when we enter as nothing and stay as nothing will silence open its secret. Its secret is itself. That's why I say all the words, all the books, all the teachings, and all the teachers can only get you to the door, and perhaps entice you to enter. Once there, you start to feel the presence of silence very powerfully. When this happens, something spontaneously arises that's willing to enter it without being somebody. That is the sacred invitation. Inside you find the silence is the final and ultimate teacher and the final and ultimate teaching. It's the only teacher that won't speak to you. Silence is the only teacher and teaching that keeps our humanness on its knees all the time. With any other teaching or teacher, we find we can get up. We can think, oh, I heard Adia said da-da-da, and it sounds good. And we find ourselves lifting up off the floor of surrender. We turn away from our most sacred and beautiful humility. Silence is the ultimate and best teacher, because in silence is the never-ending welcoming to do that which our human heart truly desires, which is to always be with our knees on the floor, always be in that sort of devotion to truth, with a capital T. Silence is the only teaching and the only teacher that is there all the time. Every minute you are awake, every minute that you are alive, every minute that you breathe, it's right there. Amen. It's right there. perfect reading. Love this reading. So wonderful. I was just reading this, and you know what it reminded me of is when Adya talks about, you know, you go to Adya speak, you know, presentation, you think, oh, that was great what he said, but then you really don't take it in. And that reminds me of what Michael Langford talks about is the intellectual pursuit of spirituality. The only way we're going to get there, if we're going to get anywhere, which is really nowhere, is going within. And what I was talking about this morning was how I likened Adya's presentation here to Michael Langford's book, The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. Because, you know, we want to get something out of meditation. I was mentioning that. I know she's recording this because I wasn't recorded this morning, so I'm going to try to say some of the things I said. But we're waiting for something to happen in the meditation. We're waiting for this discrete point in time where I'll realize something. That is not my experience so much as a natural relaxation. Because I can't force my mind to be quiet. I'm not trying to force it to be quiet. In fact, when I'm in meditation now with using Michael Langford's method, and it's not even about looking at my thoughts. In fact, he has these things called descriptions, and he doesn't talk about it. He says, you don't focus your attention on thoughts. You focus your attention on awareness. And when the thoughts come up, you just gently move over to awareness. We're not here to look at our thoughts, to analyze our thoughts, or even to accept our thoughts. In the meditation, we're there to just lay them aside, gently. So the mind will get busy. My mind this morning, he even says in his book, you're going to have times, there's lots of turmoil, a lot of emotions will come up when you're in the meditation practice. And, you know, my feeling is that's just like the ego kind of putting his hand up. I'm here. Please pay attention to me, what I have to say. And he even says if you start with a thought, don't finish the thought, just turn your attention back to awareness. And I've been doing it about a month now or longer. I've gone through all of his 26 descriptions, and I picked one. And it really talks about awareness being silent and awareness being subtle. So it's not like a total flat thing. I think of silence as flat. You know, when you think of just silence. But when I had my experience, you know, back in the mid-2000s of just having 2 days of just light and brightness, I couldn't really look at silence like that because it was a quiet time for me when I had that experience. But it was bright. It was light. It was joy. And totally grace. I've been practicing the Course for a few years before that. That hasn't happened again. But what I find has happened is kind of a melting away of my resistance, kind of in a natural way. So when I get all excited and you know, like this thing that happened this week, for example, even if this had happened probably a few months ago, I would have been in panic mode. Oh my God, what am I going to do now? I'm going to lose my place. I'm not going to have any money to pay for food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The homeless thing came up with me recently a lot in the form of a couple of people I know that are maybe facing that. But what I found this week, which I found very, this is the practice, this is how the practice works for me. I do a couple hours a day or more, once in the morning and once in the afternoon or evening, where I just do the awareness watching, awareness practice, and when I remember the loving all method. And this happened. I get this email the day before Thanksgiving, your last day will be December 16th, and I asked them for an extension and they said no. And let's just say that we probably had a disagreement on some things, and so that's. But I've also known that this was not something I would be doing for a long time. I knew that, and this is about a year. I'll be doing almost a year with them, and so I knew it was time to move on, even before I moved on. But it seems in my life that things have to kind of push themselves right in my face, and then I like, oh, okay, now it's time to look for a job. And I made the decision after I heard the news to shut down my website, to not carry any more insurance, to actually not hold myself out as an attorney unless I get hired as an attorney and someone else can pay for it. But just to let all that go, everything go. And part of all that going is the TV going. Part of all that going is just clearing out time in my day. But when I heard this Nest message on Wednesday, it was like I went a bit numb at the beginning. It was like, oh my gosh. I was at the dentist, of all things. And I got this message just before I went to the dentist. And I went to the dentist, and he told me I need 2 new crowns. I'm like, yeah, right. I still don't know, I mean, what I'm going to do with regards to that. I need some work on my car, which I'm going to go forward with because I do need transportation. The teeth thing is probably important as well. But I don't really know what will happen. I may just, you know, I don't know. I have some ideas, but I'm really not sure at this point in time. And I don't really feel guided to, like, take all my money out of my savings that's supposed to pay for taxes, at least most of my taxes, at least not very much out of it. So I'm kind of like, well, what do I do now? So instead of getting into this really scared place, it's like I went home after that. I talked to Sharon for a bit, and then I went home, and I just like, oh, what do I do? I felt this pressure on my chest, and I was like, what do I do now? And I attribute my reaction to this practice I'm doing, but I didn't feel fear. It was like I was looking inside for the fear. I was, when I've done fear searching before, fear comes up, and I'll say it'll roll through me, and it's like I stand and I hold hands with ego, with not ego, I hold hands with spirit and ask, you know, please look at this with me. And in the fear, then I allow the fear just to come up. And so I was in this process of allowing this fear to come up, but nothing was there. I didn't have any fear. And it was like, wow. So surprised. So natural. That's why this is a natural process. It's not something you can make happen. You just, it happens because you have released enough of your resistance. I still haven't felt the fear. I mean, my mind is going. I can tell you my mind is going. Like, what do I do now? Oh, I got this, I got that, and I've got, and I know I did call my bank. I'm going to, I might apply for food stamps if I need to. Right now, not feeling to talk to my family quite about it. They have a lot of fear over financial insecurity. And to go out, and I've applied for one job already. I basically decided I'm going to be more broad in my search. I'm going to go to some agencies, and I'm just, you know, we're going to be open and love, practice the loving all method while I'm doing this, because I don't know what will happen. So I would say this practice will help us out in ways we don't know. Regina talked about this morning that. For her, there is still some resistance to meditation, you know, I'm sitting in meditation sometimes, and the thoughts are coming like little banshees, and I just let them come. I as soon as I recognize there's a thought coming in, I put it aside, and I have a little moment with awareness, watching awareness, and the thought comes in, and that's okay. You know, I'm going to allow it to happen. It's like what Michael Langford says, is you do this practice and you do this practice and you don't stop. Not one day do you stop. Not one day do you let it go. You do it every day, every day. It's like falling in love. You meet someone. You're kind of interested in them. You go out on some dates. You have dinner together. You start getting more interested in them. You love the way they laugh. You like the sparkle in their eyes. The way they call you back and thank you. All that stuff, right? All of a sudden, one day, you wake up and you're in love with that person. You're just in love. And that's what this process is like. You get become in love with it. And without even trying, the only trying that you do of all is to sit in quiet for that time and listen to those descriptions for this practice. And there's other practices for sure. This isn't the only thing out there. But what that's why I call it natural. You know, when you fall in love with someone, it's a natural reaction. When you fall in love with yourself, it's another natural reaction. And so awareness becomes a love. And
look at this.
Of course, I'm not going to bring up the announcements that I had this morning either. I'm not going to talk about all that stuff because this is a different time. But he says here, and I'm going to read what I read this morning. He says, the background of awareness that is looking through your eyes. Now, Adya says this, so listen. The background of awareness that is looking through your eyes. That's all it is. It's just looking through your eyes all the time. It deserves your attention. For your entire life, you have been ignoring your true self. Your true self, the background of awareness, deserves your love and attention. Demand sanity. That's what he's talking about. Demand sanity. That's what Adya is talking about. They're saying the same thing, different words. He even has this one chapter where it's like shouting at the top of the mountain, you know. I'm almost like I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. It's kind of like that. So what we do in our lives is we turn all of our attention to what's in our bank account. We turn our attention to what people think of us. Yeah. Everything. We look out there for something. Out there. And what Michael is saying is the only effective means to end the illusion is to turn your attention away from thought, the body, the world, people, places, things, experiences, and turn your attention toward awareness, watching awareness. It's like you find your true love. Your true love is awareness. That's what your true love is. I can't remember where he says that in here, but he says that, wow, there's a section later, but he says, when the free desire for freedom becomes even stronger, the desire for freedom itself will bring you everything you need to succeed in your quest for freedom, including the answer to all your questions, the direct path, teachings, and solutions to obstacles, and motivation to practice, etc. And I would differentiate this from that seeker that's at war with itself. It's not what he's talking about here. He calls it a quest, but really what it is it's your desire. It's a desire that you have. And I'm just trying to think of what that section later on talks about the love. I can't remember where it is. I've got things circled. It's like, where is this chapter? Oh, that's chapter 5. Yeah, that's the one where he talks about awakening your desire. And I was talking about this morning where Adya says that there is something inside you something about what we want, what we really want. And this is the nothingness that he talks about. The nothingness is the eternal joy of love. Something in you longs for an end to the imposter's dream. Something in you longs for infinite love. Something in you longs for the end to all suffering and sorrow. Something in you longs for eternal joy and love. That's that silence. That's that awareness. I can't help but feel that the awareness process that Michael Langford is talking about is the same thing that Adya is talking about. Because the awareness is the nobody, it's the nothing. Only the nothing enters the silence. That's the only thing that gets in. There's the nothing. That's the awareness. And it's not the gross presence. It's the lightness, the brightness. I mean, it's kind of almost as if, you know, it's up in heaven. And when you think you're a body, you're down here heavy, you're not going to be able to open that door. Yeah, that's the awareness, watching awareness method by Michael Langford. He has other methods if that one doesn't work for you, too. I think Gene's using the loving consciousness method. But, you know, this is what he's talking about with surrender. Only nothing, nobody goes through because you surrender all of this personhood, all of this who I think I am. And for me, this experience this week of finding out that I'm not going to be having any income after the middle of December, there is an element of, you know, anxiety. I still feel that, but I don't feel that fear like I did before. I also keep reminding myself of living in the moment now. I can't live in 2 weeks. I can only live now. And it was so helpful to listen to that Eckhart Tolle posting. I don't know if it was Ruby that posted it, but I put it in my Facebook page. And he just says, you know, people ask him, where am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to be with? And he says, you're supposed to be where you are right now, who the people you are with right now, in the situation you are with in right now. That is exactly where you are to be. And people, you know, they look, and I see myself wanting to project out into the future. And I remember what Eckhart says, right here, with the people you're with now, with the situation that is now, and not somewhere else. Not somewhere more advanced, not somewhere more peaceful, not somewhere more silent, but just where I'm at now. That is the way that we surrender, is to be where we're at now. And it's so hard to do because you start thinking, well, the bills have to be paid. How am I going to pay the bills? you know, I've got the teeth work that need to be done. How am I going to do that? All this stuff comes up, and it wants you to find out and figure out, when you know that that's like in the Matrix, where, you know, Neo is in the car and the rain's coming down and the guys are there in the car, and he has a choice to go back to what he was, which was the dream, or decide to go forward. And one of the other gals there says to him, you know that road, you know what it looks like, you've been there before. That's exactly when the ego keeps pressing you to figure things out. You've been there before. You can start to discontinue listening to that answer that's no answer. That's how I see it. You know, you don't need to have that answer now, here, right now. This is where you need to be, not someplace 2 weeks from now, or 6 months from now, or tomorrow. And we forget that, because then we start thinking about life in the world. As Michael Langford says, the situations, experiences, we're looking out there for some answer. And there'll always be something to answer. That's the thing, you know, we get one situation, another one coming up. And that's perfect, Kathy. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. When I have these things come up and the things come up in my mind, I have to continually remind myself, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks. I don't know what's going to happen. I do feel like there was, you know, something was the energy was starting to move, and I felt like there would be an ending here at some point, but I didn't know when. So now I'm like off the duff looking for work. Exactly when I needed to. Wasn't before. Because I before I was more picky. Now it's like I don't care. I do need to pay bills or not. It seems like I have to pay bills, pay for food, things like that. But really, you know, what is my real focus is, you know, what is your real practice? And it was interesting because I think I might have talked about this in the room, but I was talking to Chris Celine about my family and how they talk about each other. And I finally had the guts to tell my brother that I wasn't going to talk about my sister this week. I finally told him, you know, this is my spiritual practice. You know, it doesn't bring me peace to talk about other people. You know, it doesn't bring me peace to have stories about myself, that I'm, that I don't spend enough time every day in meditation. Maybe I should spend 3 hours and not two. All stories, all equally untrue. Stories we tell ourselves. A spiritual being, I guess, just doing that would be fun. I don't know where I'm led to. I'm just looking for work right now. And I don't even know if any of this will work out. But I feel it's important to send the energy out that I'm willing to do things I hadn't done before. In fact, I was looking at one position that was before. I didn't like it. I had all these thoughts about it. I don't really like it. It was in fundraising. It might be a little bit more like what Dolores does. And I can't do that. I don't want to do that. Asking people for money and stuff like that. And then the thought occurred in my mind, you know, that's just a thought you have about that job. That's just a thought you had about that job. And, you know, do you really need to hang on to that thought anymore? No. So it's like, then I could release myself to actually apply for the job, which I did with a local hospital. So I don't know if anything will happen with it, but I was willing to release my meaning I was giving to it. So a lot of this is releasing meaning I'm giving. There is certainly, again, seeing the attachments I have to things around me, the things I buy, the things I eat, even my own cats. So I don't know. I really, really don't know. But the bank did tell me that they would be willing to do some work with me, and since I've never had any issues of not payment before. So we'll see. My feeling is the way will open the way it's supposed to, and only my resistance will stop up what is to be. And, you know, our resistance can show up in so many ways. Judgment of other people, that's resistance. So I don't really, you know, this reading today was so perfect because it just reminded me that nothing is everything. Nothing is everything. And it's not a fight. It's not a fight. Hal had said that he's had that issue before, that it was a fight for him. And when he did the reading this morning, and when he read it, he realized that I thought it had to be a spiritual struggle. And what I find is that it happens naturally as we increase our desire for liberation. And you can use other words. I could... There's all kinds of options. I don't know whether renting is a good idea for me. I don't really know. I've got stuff here, so I don't really know. I'm just kind of like letting things happen. One of the things about Portland, Oregon, is that there's rents are extremely high, super high here. It's not like, you know, like in Pueblo. It's very high and a lot of competition. So I don't know if that's a way that might present itself to me. I don't know, but I'm certainly open to whatever comes my way. So who knows? I love the tiny houses. I will say that, Dances. I think they're so sweet. Of course, my place isn't very big. But, you know, if it's a struggle, you know who's involved. Yeah, it's a struggle. If it's a struggle, who's struggling? It's like you can watch what happens and not struggle with what happens. If you are struggling, it's a clear sign that you're paying attention to the ego. Clear sign. Okay, I'm going to play a song because I normally do a song. So I think I'll just do a musical song, because that's always kind of nice to, let's just do that. I'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks. Thank you. beautiful song, beautiful song. Not quite what I played this morning, but I still think it's a beautiful song. You know, I was looking at the reading from this morning, and I really enjoyed the part where he talks about that stillness is not separate from movement, and that true quiet is not being in opposition to noise. And really, when you think about anything in opposition, that's resistance. I mentioned this morning that Adi Ashanti would—he had this one of his books. He talked about he would have this meditation group, and I guess somebody was playing music next door, and he said, "You know, just do your meditation. Don't worry about the music. Just let it happen." And it's like being in acceptance, even in the meditation. I know with me, I don't sit still when I'm in meditation. I'm like, you know, moving my legs, or I've got to clear my throat, or I cough. And I just get into this relaxed mode with it, and I don't worry about it anymore. It's a small example, but what happens is that we feel we have to meet some kind of expectation with meditation or contemplation, or and this is this another extension of, like, how do I do at work, and will my partner still love me if I do this? You know, it's the same thing where you have a conditional type of situation. And that's really resistance. If there's conditions on a situation, that's resistance. And the real stillness allows everything to just be. So in the real stillness that he's talking about here, the quietness, is the same thing as the awareness, which is just what you carry. It's behind your eyes. You walk, and Adi even said this in another book, or maybe this one, somewhere, that, you know, who is looking through these eyes? Actually, you know what I think it is? I think he said that on an interview that was done of him in the Waking Up series. He said, I think the last thing he said was, who is looking through these eyes? And that's the awareness. And the way Michael talks about it, that awareness is with you when you wake up, and all throughout your day, there's the awareness. You have it there all the time. It's your constant companion. There is a... He has this thing where which is kind of cute. He has a thing called Choice A and Choice B. Choice A is being in constant love, joy, eternal awareness. And Choice B is all the rest, which is suffering. What do you want, Choice A or Choice B? Every day. So he's very insistent, do your practice every day. But that is how we relax. That is how I have to say that my life isn't like in super turmoil right now, because I've been doing this practice every day, through the difficult times, through the easy times, seemingly easy times, every day. You know, every day. And you drop the drama. You drop the attachments. But it's not something that you have to force. I mean, it's a natural expression of your willingness and desire. Yeah, exactly. I like the way you put that, Dan. It's good enough is everywhere that not good enough isn't. I mean, we have these dichotomies all the time in the world, and it's like, it's really just a really great way to go. So I'm looking, boy, if I can remember, there's this great place in here where he talks about, something which is really great. Talks about, you know, it's just a wonderful way to look at this, in the sense of the love that you find, that this is a love that you find for yourself. Yeah, but I never seem to be able to find it when I'm trying to find it, and then some other time I do find it. Yeah. Just looking at that right now, but I have things underlined. I'm kind of thinking it's an underlined thing, but yeah. But even seeing the ego preservation strategies becomes a natural thing. And he talks about you have to see the ways the ego keeps itself alive in your experience. He talks about every moment of your life. Every moment of your life is dedicated to your freedom. Every moment, not like just morning and night, but all the time. When you're at work, you're dedicated to freedom. It's not like it's a part-time job. But it's not something that you have to force on yourself. This is the thing. It's like that thing Adia talks about. You know, the struggle that people think they have to have, the spiritual seeker struggle. You don't need that. And if you don't want to spend, I can't spend 12 hours a day doing that. That's okay. You spend what you can. But for me, it's not about, oh my gosh, I can't spend X amount of hours a day. That's terrible. I spend what I can. It's about not resisting if you can't spend a lot of time. You just do what you can. And you, in between time, the loving all method is a great way to function in the world. It's because that's an outward looking practice. So outward looking, loving all, inward looking, awareness watching awareness, or the loving consciousness method. And that's just his prescription. You know, there are many, many wonderful teachers out there that have great ways. Ventino Massaro has wonderful ways he helps people out. We have to find what calls to us and what really, really, really touches our hearts. But no, it doesn't happen. Typically, at least that I've experienced, it doesn't happen immediately. It happens as you continue to deepen your surrender, your practice of surrender, which is going to happen naturally. I was so resistant to surrender. Oh my gosh, I still am a lot. Surrender is just one of those things, you know, and I had a very big resistance to it. And it just seems like it's slowly melting away. I know Regina talked about when she was writing in Ramana how she had a lot of resistance to it as well. And golly gee, you know. Let's see how she feels now about it, how her life has become more peaceful. It's not because you want peace, but the work you do to get there is a constant practice and is a willingness to do that. If you're not willing, that's okay too. I love the way Jan Fraser says, you don't have to wake up. Maybe you just have a better life. I mean, in the better life being a more peaceful life. Maybe that's what you get. Maybe that's what you get. Maybe you live this life happier. If there are other lives, excuse me, I will get my water here. Maybe when there's other lives, you're more that you start higher on the ladder, I guess. Wow. Who knows? Who knows where you'll be at? All you know is what Eckhart Tolle said. Where you're meant to be is where you're at right now, with the people you're with, in the situation you're in. That's exactly where you're supposed to be. And if you think it's anything else otherwise, that's the ego trying to tell you that something's not right. That you have to get out. The ego is the responsible for the anxiety that you feel, the fear that you feel. Oh, hi, Kathy. Yeah, Kathy's... Sorry, guys. This is just a... That's why self-inquiry is super important, to be looking at your thoughts. I don't look at them in meditation, but I look at them all the other times. I notice them, and I use the loving all method. I can love these thoughts exactly as they are. It takes the wind out of the sails of the ego. That's the way, rubber meets the road is the practice. But it's taken me a long time, it seems like. It seems like a long time. A long time coming. But I don't even have to think that way. I don't have to think about any of that. I don't know anything. It's one of the best aspects of the Course in Miracles, when I don't know. I don't know what anything is for. I don't know what's in my best interest. When I don't know, I become that nobody. That I become the nothingness. Only the nothing enters the silence. That's the only thing that gets in. That's what Adi is saying to us. When I don't know, I don't have an identity. I don't have a personality. I just don't know. I can accept what is. And I can go in the door when the door is opened up. So Adia talks about silence being our only teacher. You could use the words awareness being our only teacher. Because it's always there. You wake up, awareness is there. It looks through your eyes. It's with you all day. You can always step back, turn inward, and watch your awareness at any time during the day. Just be with it. You can do that any time. That could be almost a form of a mantra, looking in all the time. When you have a moment, just look back in. You know, really, what else is there with this life? But to have the desire to know who you really are. Who am I? That's what he asked at the beginning of the reading this morning. Who am I? And what is the truth? That's a question we can ask ourselves every day. I like the way Michael Langford says, you know, don't waste a second. Don't waste a second. I did the eternal, I recorded the eternal method the other day. It's actually an hour and a half long. But it's a meditation that you do in the dark and laying down, and you just listen to it. And there's like a minute between each sentence. And I recorded it with a few coughs and throat clearings. But I did it's called the Eternal Method, and it's a way to get yourself out of thinking awareness is located in your body, in your head. But it's only something for like, you know, once a week. But I was doing it, and I found I got fidgety. I get fidgety when I'm meditating. I get fidgety. You know what? Accept the fidgeting. You know, it's okay. That's what's always to accept what is. If I'm fidgeting, I'm fidgeting. You know, who's fidgeting? It's the ego in resistance. That's okay. I can accept that. Let it be in resistance. I can still sit there and just be, you know, and turn my attention to awareness, watching awareness every month. As much as I can. So, anyway, it's pretty interesting work here. And so, you know, the question for any of us and all of us is, what do I really want? Do I really want the truth? Do I want to know who I really am? And the only way we can do that is through a practice, not necessarily this one, through a practice that calls to us, the teachers that call to us, to bring us to the door. So that said, I'm at the half hour. I've been on for 1 hour, and appreciate you all joining with me here today. Silence, quiet stillness is golden for sure. I'm letting go of the mic, and I think Kathy's time is now. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Goodbye.
Hi guys, hopefully I am audible. Yes, thank you. Just want to say that last week, I have no clue, in mid-sentence, everything went out. I could not get in.